I'm Annie. I'm an alcoholic. I don't really know where to start, except I was introduced to AA through alcoholism. And that's something that for a long time I questioned whether or not I was an alcoholic. But while I was there, I was really made to look at, like, my drinking history and when I wasn't in my eating disorder, like, what I was doing with my time. I forgot to say my sobriety date, September 2nd of 2013. I'm trying to think. I have learned so much since I've been here that I don't even know where to, I've learned that I don't have to people please to make people happy, and I can do things to make myself happy. I've learned that I can go through a breakup and not drink. I've learned that people are human and that I need to not be so critical of myself. Throughout all of this, I've made so many friends that I couldn't imagine. And before this, I did not have a very good relationship with my family. Recently, I've been staying with my cousins since my ex and I broke up. And had I not gone back with her, and had she not broken up with me a second time, I would not have had nowhere to go. I would have been relying on her because that was one of the things that I mainly did was rely on people financially. Once she broke up with me, I had nowhere to go, and my family that I haven't seen since I was here for 3 years actually took me in. They've been letting me stay with them. And that has been a blessing in disguise. I have definitely learned that there is a higher power. I do have a higher power. And he has a sense of humor, likes to disguise things that I would not think would make a difference in my life. Since I've been sober, I've had an opportunity to get involved in FikiPaw, which has really helped me to widen my horizons, I guess you could say. I'm very, very grateful that I stuck with AA and I didn't just say screw it after I got out of treatment. And without further ado, my sponsor, Nikki.
I'm Nikki. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is the same as Lloyd's, July 27th of 9. And I'm really proud of Annie. And I know I just spoke here recently, so I'm sorry. They got the two sponsees I have right now got sober 4 months apart, and they have been a really great blessing in my life. I think the biggest thing that Annie's taught me is that she's helped me to see the things that look like really awful situations turn into blessings. And I've needed to, talk her down, off the ledge when horrible things have happened. I'm like, I don't know how God's going to handle this, but I know it's going to be fine, that strengthened my belief in God and my ability to not doubt, God's plan for me. So I'm really proud of her, and she's definitely been through, like she was saying, a lot of crap in the last couple months, and she's still sober, and she's still abstinent with her food, and she's doing really great, and I love her very much. I guess I'm just going to tell you my story again, and I've self-centeredly been nervous all day long. I really don't like to speak at this group. I feel like this group is very judgy, and I'm most of the time victim to that myself, but whatever. when I was praying on the way over here and earlier in the bathroom, like, you know, I was just asking God to, like, help me remember that this isn't really even about me. It's about Annie. It's about people that are new and maybe people that aren't new that just need to hear something. So I got sober at 19, and it's been 5 years. And I certainly didn't plan on staying sober this long. And alcoholism runs in my family, just like Lloyd. I relate a lot. A lot of the people in my immediate family are still sober, and they've been sober most of my life. My brother has 7 years sober, and my parents have more time sober than I've been alive. And I heard a lot about AA before I ever got here. And I heard a lot about, you know, like, the slogans and spirituality. And I was previously exposed to a lot of stuff that rang a lot of bells when I ended up getting sober. You know, and I thought AA was a bunch of bullshit as well. It seemed like a lot to do, and it seemed like somebody had control in your life, like having a sponsor. And, you know, I remember always wanting to grow up, like, so fast, you know, and, like, never being satisfied with where I was at in life, especially, like, as a teenager. You know, and I wanted to be a grown-up. I wanted to drive my vehicle. I wanted to have my own place. I wanted to make my own rules. I wanted to spend my own money. I wanted to do what I wanted to do from the time I can remember. You know, and that's probably still pretty accurate in my life today in terms of wanting what I want, you know, and not being satisfied with anything else. But I just remember being really dissatisfied with life and feeling like I got dealt a bad hand. You know, and I've always been a person that's been stricken with self-centered fear and anxiety and how I'm going to be perceived in a situation. I always wanted to be the center of attention when I was a kid, and I wanted to stand out, you know, and I thought, like, I was nicknamed Wild Child at 9 for just being, like, crazy, you know, just, like, being wild and hyper and crazy. And if you gave me sugar, it was really bad. I was diagnosed ADHD, but if you took away sugar, I was, like, a normal kid to a degree. I always had a strong interest in boys. If I liked a boy at a young age, I would just chase them around until they were ready to kill me and, like, physically hurt me. That's how I showed affection, you know, for a long time. And so, you know, like, I didn't have any plans to drink. And I thought that alcohol was bad. I thought drugs were bad. I judged people for doing it. I wasn't friends with anybody that was doing drugs in high school, and I shunned anybody that did. I remember being exposed to, like, friends of mine, like, drinking over the summer before high school, and just feeling so out of place about it. Like, I didn't want to drink. I didn't want to participate. I wanted to tell on them. I wanted to tell their parents. Like, I don't know what my problem was, but I eventually did participate in getting high and drinking alcohol. And I don't know, the first time I ever touched alcohol, I spit it out. It was awful. It stung. It was Bacardi, and it was really awful, you know, and I spit it out immediately. And then I remember trying beer, and that wasn't as horrible of a taste. I don't ever remember, like, liking alcohol. I never got past the point of this hurts, like, this sucks. Weed was cool because you can, like, I smoked cigarettes from an early age because that was, like, the cool thing to do. And I liked smoking pot. That was fun. I don't think I inhaled pot, though, for, like, 4 years. Like, I didn't know how to inhale. But, like, I didn't know that until I actually inhaled once, and I was like, oh, wow, it's different. So whatever, like, super strong self-centered desire to be perceived a certain way. And I always wanted to be cool. And I remember somebody put it this way earlier this week in a meeting I heard, that there was always them and then there was me. And that's how I always felt. And I don't know, like, it didn't matter what social circle I existed in. It didn't matter what sport I was playing. It didn't matter what club I joined. I felt like an outsider. And I always felt like if you really knew me, you wouldn't like me. And that's a really hard thing to keep up. like trying to be perceived how you think somebody wants you to be perceived, but not even really knowing what they want, you know. And I always had a boyfriend in high school to the point where it was unhealthy, like they would become my world. And my first introduction to institutions was when I was cheated on for the first time at 16. You know, like the one cheated on me after 2.5 years. And I don't know, I lost it. I like got off of my birth control pills immediately, which is actually a bad thing for hormones, and you can kind of go crazy in addition to being an alcoholic and crazy. But like a combination of things happened, and I ended up Baker acted at Morton Plant 3 days before Christmas when I was 16. And I put my hands on my mother that night. And at the time, like, I was a cheerleader, and I had, like, nasty, strong arms, and I was able to kind of overpower her, and I knew it. And, you know, that took a lot of time to repair, you know, because it wasn't just my mother that I hurt, you know, like, that affects, like, the whole family. You know, and my brother was getting sober at the time, and I just remember feeling a lot of shame and a lot of guilt over decisions I made that were centered around self, you know, and not really understanding that my actions affected anyone. You know, I thought that my actions affected me and that you need to mind your own business and that this has nothing to do with you, and that's just kind of the way that I thought, which I think is like a normal thought for most people. So after 16 and after high school, I didn't really drink at all in high school after those few couple of times where I just got drunk and got sick and moved on. It didn't actually take on a daily thing until college. And I remember when I got to college, I was living with 3 people, and they were all over 21, and they wanted to drink, like, the first night we were there. And I remember taking pictures of the bottle that they had gotten, and I was going to get them in trouble, and I wasn't going to participate, and just being so uncomfortable around people. And I really had not understood yet at this point what alcohol could do for me, that alcohol could be a sense of belonging, that alcohol could be the tool that I obtained to fit in life. And and that's what it turned out to be eventually, you know. And the freedom that I got in college gave me the, you know, the wherewithal to do whatever the hell I wanted, you know. And I went to a lot of parties in college, and I had never been to a party really before that. I was never allowed to go to parties. I was grounded a lot of the time in high school. And I became known as that girl that, like, would fall asleep in the elevator at school, or that would become too drunk at the party and just be an ass, you know, or, like, somebody that would sleep with your boyfriend. And I started to gain a really bad reputation, but with as impaired as I was, I didn't even care. And I thought that everybody was jealous, and I thought that everybody wanted to be like me because they were talking about me. And I just had a very distorted perception of self, always, you know. And I thought it was, like, a cool thing to do. And, like, my drinking career did not last long. I drank for maybe 3 years. And I don't know if, you know, like, I've been told before that I probably, like, could drink some more, you know, and that I don't necessarily need to be an AA. But the reality is that, like, I got to a place mentally and spiritually where I was going to die or I was going to get sober, you know, and I couldn't have verbalized that to anybody at the time at the end, but it was almost like I had lost this ability in my life to say, like, this isn't the right time for me to be drinking. I don't have, you know, enough money to be doing this. I have class tomorrow. Like, anything that a normal person might rationalize to themselves to not drink just started to become second, you know, started to become back burner. And I started to not care about things that I actually really cared about a lot. You know, and like, I cared about my relationship with my brother, and I had written him off, and I cared about the relationship with my mom, and I had written her off, you know. And like, school used to be a big deal to me, and I was failing out, and I didn't care, you know. And so slowly I start to realize that I'm losing control, and I start to like concoct these certain ideas about how I can maintain control and still be able to do what I want to do. And I thought maybe if I worked out, it would help. I'm not sure why. I thought maybe if I only, like, got drunk and high on the weekends, it would be okay. I thought if everything at my school was done, like all classwork was over, I would go do it. But it started to not matter, you know, and my roommates were saying that I couldn't smoke in the house anymore, and that was, like, my spot. Like, that was where I got high most of the time. So I was, like, being subjected to my car, you know, which is kind of dangerous. And I used to ride around town and country, like, trying to sell weed to people at stoplights, and that's not smart. And I'm a bad drug dealer, I found out. I don't know why I wanted to be one. I guess I just wanted to fit in or something. No, I wanted to get fronted, really, like a lot of weed, and he said I'd had to sell it, and I didn't. And I ran. I probably owe him an amends. I don't know if you owe amends to drug dealers. I'll have to talk to Rachel. Anyways, so I'm not a good drug dealer. I'm not a good liar. I'm not a very good drug addict. I'm failing at life. And, the only reason I'm keeping my job is because I'm dating the boss, and I had that job the whole time I was getting high, and that was for 2 years, and I worked at Burger King. Perfect job for me. I worked overnight shifts, slept in the back, nobody cared. So around May of 2009, I thought that I should go to rehab or something, and I thought, like, I don't know what I thought. For a long time, I didn't want to say anything out loud, because if I said something out loud to somebody, they'd tell me to stop, you know, and I remember my boss, my boyfriend at the time, was like, if you, like, were sober, you would be a better worker, and if you were sober, we would have more conversations, and if you were sober, like, all these things. He really wanted me to slow down or stop altogether, and I would just get fiercely angry, you know, like, get out of my life, don't be my boyfriend anymore, I'll quit, I don't care, you know, like, those are the things that I would say. And, like, you know, whatever, he let me keep the job, but so I started to, like, it started to eat me alive that I wanted to stop and couldn't. And I called my brother on around May of 2009, and I told him, I think I need to go to a meeting. And so he took me to a meeting, and he took me to 3333 on a Monday. And that was at 10 p.m., and I think that Stan was chairing the meeting. And I was totally creeped out by AA at first. I really didn't know what to expect. I'd never really been to a meeting at this point for myself. And Billy seemed to have a lot of friends in AA, you know, and it seemed like there was a lot of fun here. It seemed like there was, like, a community spirit, and, like, everybody kind of liked each other. And again, it was like there was them and then there was me. And my desire to fit in here was so minimal. You know, like, my social skill at the time had belittled down to, do you get high? And if you said yes, then I was your friend. And then we could hang out. And most of the time, I met people at the drive-through window. And, like, that was it. Like, those were my social skills, you know. And so when I was introduced to women in AA, I was like, why are you introducing me to women? Like I would rather hang out with you or your friends, you know. And he wasn't really having it, and he shoved me off on some chick outside of 3333. And he was like, I can't help you get sober. I can bring you to a meeting, but I can't help you get sober. And I remember being devastated. I thought I was going to ask my brother to sponsor me. And, you know, just totally not really knowing what to do and what this was about. And so I sat down next to Kaylin outside of 33, and she started to tell me, like, her life story. And I was like, what? Like, who? I don't even know you. Like, why are you telling me all this stuff? Like, her life was like an open book, you know, or whatever. And so I think she was just, like, talking. And I, at the end of that conversation, decided that she would not be my sponsor because she seemed like she had a lot going on. And so, you know, whatever, which is, okay, if somebody has a lot going on, they probably need a sponsor, so just forewarning. And so she ended up pushing me off on one of the girls that she sponsored, and she was my sponsor for a little while. And Katie would come and pick me up in West Chase every day, and we would come to meetings, and we'd come here early, and I'd set up the meeting, and I thought that was ridiculous to be here an hour and a half before the meeting started. And I was early to every meeting. You know, like, it didn't matter if it was my home group. And I was participating and being forced into service. And it was horrible. I hated it. I thought this was arbitrary and stupid. And I wasn't even sure. Like, you know when you meet somebody and I'm like, do you want a sponsor? And they're like, oh, I'm still checking it out. Like, I'm not really sure what I want yet. Like, that's kind of where I was. And, like, I signed up to have a sponsor, and I didn't know what that meant. She kept reading the book to me, like, before the meeting, and I didn't know I was even working steps at that point, but I was, apparently. And I got through 1, 2, and 3 a couple of times. I could not stay sober. I didn't necessarily relapse because I wasn't doing anything, but I just kept going out and changing my sobriety date. And people kept saying stupid things, like, change your people, places, and things. And don't date at 18 years old. Don't date. Like, you're right. I could not fathom the idea of giving up any idea that I had had yet. And my ideas weren't, like, totally weird to me. Like, having a boyfriend, going to be the designated driver for people, arranging drug deals but not doing them. Like, those were ideas that seemed normal to me, you know, and not anything I was willing to give up. And so subsequently, I continued to get high, and I continued to change my sobriety date, you know? And I had dwindled down to, like, one friend. And I had one friend, and she spoke primarily Spanish, and I thought for so long that I was going to be Colombian and, like, try to fool the world and be Spanish. And I know very little Spanish anyway. But anyways, she was, like, my best friend, and she worked with me at Burger King, and she came to meetings with me. And she was super supportive of me getting sober. And I would leave a meeting. I remember distinctively this happening one time specifically. I was at Turning Point, and I just left, and I knew my dealer lived across the street in that, you know, shady little place. And I looked at her, and I was like, that was a really dumb meeting. Let's go across the street. And she was like, are you sure? Like, you're in AA now. Like, you're supposed to be sober and stuff. And I was like, yeah, I'll just pick up a white tip tomorrow. I really only have a couple of days anyway, so it's not that big of a deal. And that's the mental game that I started to play, where it's so hard to, like, stay, like, when you only have a little bit to lose, you know? And, like, each time I stayed sober, it was becoming harder and harder to come back. And I had gotten to a place where I'd gotten about close to 60 days sober, and I attended, like, this little party that happened at 3333, and I dressed up like Janis Joplin, and somebody was Kim Kardashian, I think Amanda was Kim Kardashian. We had, like, a little party where you dress up like a celebrity. I was Janis Joplin because my mother had something to do with the outfit. And so I went to this club thing at, you know, 33, and that was really fun. And Billy was still breakdancing at the time, so it was, like, super awesome. And that was in that time frame, and I started to really kind of like AA, and it seemed like these people knew how to party. Like, of course, like, alcoholics know how to have a good time. And I had met a friend, and, you know, China was, like, my road dog, and we had, like, the same sobriety date, and it was great, you know? And I forget what happened. I think I, like, had relapsed, and I had told my mom that I hadn't relapsed. So I had, like, one sobriety date with her and, like, one sobriety date with Katie, and, like, everybody kind of knew a different story. So I was kind of, like, having trouble keeping up with it. And so I decided that I was going to relapse one more time and just even the score, and everybody would know what sobriety date I was going to have. Because it was just too hard to, like, calculate who knew what. And so I thought the reason that, like, I was having trouble staying sober was because I was, like, trying to get sober in the same, like, living facility that I was getting high in. And so I move home to St. Pete, which now I'm driving to every meeting I know of because I got sober primarily in Tampa. And I relapsed within 2 days of being home, you know, because still at this point, like, I'm hanging out with people I really shouldn't be hanging out with. I had been successful a few times without, like, you know, managing to pick up a drink. And I was somebody's designated driver, and I was like, I could do this. Like, I didn't drink. Like, it's okay. And that was that, like, bulletproof vest that I was kind of building and was eventually going to be, you know, the end of it. And so I hang out with this guy, and I know I told the story last time, so I'm sorry. This was, like, my last drunk, or my last high, rather. And I'm hanging out with this guy from high school, and I called him over to hang out, and I could tell within a few minutes of talking that, like, he got high, like, a lot, and I didn't know that prior to hanging out with him. And I think he had, like, weed on him or something, and I just decided in the middle of it that it would be fine and that I could handle it and that I don't drink and I don't get high, and he knows that. And, like, he said that he respected that and, like, you know, that, like, he wanted me to be sober and power to the people and that kind of thing. And I ended up making amends to him. But I wasn't on my amends yet. I was actually on step 3, approaching step 4, but I started to, like, thank you, because I started to, like, hear in AA that you can make amends and, like, get relief and get those 9-step promises that they read everywhere, and I really wanted that, and so I started to make amends unsponsored, without direction, and I made amends to him, and he said, like, when I said, what can I do to make it right, he was like, okay, like, you can come back to my house with me. And that's what you can do to make it right. And so I went back to his house, and there was, like, a little party going on. It was just, like, a few people that I knew from high school. And, like, immediately I'm, like, filled with fear, and, like, I don't know what to say, and I don't know who, like, if they're going to like me and, like, what they've been up to since a year before I got out of high school. And so I start talking about AA, and I start telling them about, like, the big book and meetings and my chips and, you know, my sponsor and whatever. I just start talking because it's, like, the only social skill I have left, and they were all getting high, and I still was, like, in this determination that it's going to be fine and that I'm not going to suffer another sobriety day. Like, I don't want to pick up another white chip, you know, and that's, like, the only thing clouding my mind. But this guy next to me was having trouble rolling this blunt, and I was, like, really good at that, and so I told him that I would fix it, and as soon as I, like, tasted that paper, I immediately, like, didn't want to be sober anymore, and I had kind of forgotten all about AA, and, like, it didn't matter, you know, and, like, everything in me was, like, it doesn't matter, you can just pick up another white chip and move on. You know, and so I got high that night, just like I always did, and I somehow managed to set off my mother's alarm, which, like, sounds the house, and I don't even remember driving home, you know, like, I just remember being really shameful and really guilty about it, and I thought about killing myself the next day. I thought about, like, AA not working for me and thinking that, like, I had tried AA. And if you're in a 12-step program, I recommend that you work the 12 steps before you decide it doesn't work. I had only worked 1, 2, and 3, and that was really, you know, not even wholeheartedly. And I still wasn't praying. I still wasn't active in my program. I wasn't really wanting to be here. And that was evident, you know, because I drank again. And so I went to Red Door that night and cried and told everybody I relapsed and that it was over for me and there's just no hope. And I got a new sponsor that night, and the sponsor I got was really strict and really hard and really tough and, you know, told me what to do and when to do it and when to be there and what meetings to go to and what to say and to not share, and, like, she told me not to share for, like, 90 days, and that was, like, the hardest thing I could have ever done. Like, I love to take meetings hostage, you know, and, like, just spill my guts and, you know, whatever. She said that Red Door was the exception. But anyways, I did what she told me to for some reason. I did what she asked, and I was just desperate enough in that moment to believe that somebody else knew better, you know, and I think that I needed to go through that. I think I needed to learn the true definition of powerlessness to truly believe that I'm an alcoholic. I'd never heard that word powerless before I got to AA, you know, and to be powerless is the beginning, you know, like, if I don't believe I'm powerless, if I don't believe that I can't, like, get high or get drunk again on my own accord, like, this isn't gonna work, you know, and I hated it. I hated myself. I wanted to die, you know, and, like, that's only something that an alcoholic can really feel. Like, I talked to my work friends, and I'm like, yeah, I got sober at 19, and I was, like, going to die or get sober, and they were like, what? why don't you just stop drinking? Like, why don't you just, like, stop getting high? Like, of course, like, that seems absolutely logical. And, like, I just, it turns out I just don't have it in me, you know, and, I don't know if things would have been different if I was 21 before I got sober, or what would have happened if I had drank longer. I know that when I heard about blackouts in AA, I was extremely jealous that I had never had one. And I, that's what I always wanted to achieve, was like, was just total loss of my life, total loss of say in what happens, you know. And I remember a sponsee of mine speaking once, and she said that, like, she said that alcohol made decisions for her, and that alcohol told her what to wear and where to be and who to sleep with and who not to sleep with, you know. And, like, I always wanted that. And so when I came here and I felt like people were reading me my mail, I felt like people knew me before they even knew who I really was, it just became undeniable that, like, I needed to be here. And, you know, and so I got sober, and I haven't had a drink or pot or anything since that time. And it's been really hard lately. You know, like, I relate a lot to Lloyd, and it's funny that he mentioned, like, at 5 years he kind of stopped doing what's right in AA. And, like, I definitely relate. There's been a lot of times where I've been walking around with a big head and a little program, you know, and in my first couple of years, it was like a game, like, how many sponsees can I get, or how many service positions can I say I have, or how many committees can I serve on. And although those are very, very positive things to have in your sobriety, what's supposed to be humbling and bringing you closer to God and the people around you made my head so big that I was separated from everything and everyone. You know, and I've gone through waves of that in my sobriety. And I think a lot of it, like, I don't know about you, I only know what I've done, but, you know, a lot of it's like me growing up. You know, like, I got sober young, and in terms of, like, personal respect and, you know, respect for others around me, and, you know, like, being principled, those things are so foreign, you know. And if you look at an 18-year-old and tell them that all their ideas are stupid and they have to give them all up, like, they're gonna say F you most of the time, you know. And that's kind of like where I lived in that mentality. So when I turned 21 in sobriety, I got really scared. I thought that for sure that, like, I was gonna drink. And you know, I remember, like, making a reservation almost to that when I turn 21, if certain things don't line up in my sobriety, that I'm going to drink, you know. And I had a really great 21st birthday. You know, we went to Cheesecake Factory, and all the sponsees I had at the time were there, and all my friends in AA. And we tried to go to the Hard Rock after, but it just didn't work out, and that's probably for the best. Because Caitlin wasn't 21 yet, that's why. So we couldn't go. And but anyways, like, over the last 5 years, I mean, I've heard a speaker say that I really relate to. She said that she's a person today that she wouldn't have even liked, and she lives a life that she wouldn't have even wanted. And I definitely identify with that. You know, like, I would have hated me now if I was new, you know, or even if I wasn't in sobriety. And I hated people like me when I was new. Like, oh, you think you're Mrs. AA, you think you're the queen of AA, blah, blah, blah. You know, and I've heard that from people before, and it's like, I don't. Like, I'm not an expert. I don't know anything about AA or staying sober, you know. It's like, I just try to do what's been taught to me. And, like, it's been a really humbling experience, feeling like I was new again at 5 years sober, and it's been really awesome to feel still surrounded and know that, like, the arms of AA are going to catch me and carry me through whatever I think I'm not able to do on my own, you know. And my relationship with God has been tested a lot, you know. And any time that I'm not feeling right, like, it always comes down to prayer. It always comes down to, where am I at with God? And, like, for some reason, that's the first thing to go. You know, when things are good, I stop praying. I stop meditating. I stop doing the things that are going to connect me to others. And I feel more connected in AA when I'm including God. I feel more connected at work when I'm including God. Like, it is the only peace that I have, you know. And so that's been picked up again drastically, you know. Like, I think I went a few months without praying right before I turned 5 years sober. And, you know, like, it's like this conscious awareness of God always, but this personal time, like, either on your knees or alone or, you know, whatever it is that you do, like, I need that. I need personal time with God. I need personal connection, you know, and it's so much more than just knowing God's there and knowing God's got me. Like, I have to participate in that relationship more than anything else. You know, and so when I thought I was about to relapse right before I turned 5 years sober, I started praying religiously, you know, like on my knees every morning, every night, like, thank God I'm alive, because for so long I really felt like dying in AA. You know, and that's not a strong message of hope, but like the reality is that like life is going to happen, you know, and like no matter what time you have sober or how many sponsees you have or how close you can feel to God, like, stuff's still going to happen, you know, and it's those things that my foundation is important for, you know, like my foundation AA to keep coming to meetings. Like, right now I'm kind of going through something in my life where there's not a whole lot of people that I'm close to that put meeting attendance as a high priority. And that's totally fine for them. But for me, right now, I'm trying to step up my meeting game and, like, go to as many meetings as I can physically make, you know. And I remember recently, like, complaining to my sponsor. I'm like, I feel like I'm alone. I feel like I'm not with people, you know, and going to meetings by myself. And she's like, look around you. Like, there's probably people in the meeting there. Like, you're not going to an empty room. And I'm like, you're right, I'm not. And she's like, so reach your hand out like you're new and start re-networking, you know. And that's hard. And that's really humbling and, like, not something I'm totally comfortable with right now, you know. But I ended up sharing about that in a meeting on Tuesday. And some chick called me and was like, I'll be your meeting buddy. And I was like, okay, great. Like, it was really humbling and really cool. And she's really great. Like, who knew other cool people in AA existed besides myself? Like, I don't know what I thought, but, like, I just think I'm immediately you're not going to like me, so I'm just not even going to try, you know? And that'll keep you lonely, you know? And so one thing that I really got out of Lloyd's talk a lot was to stay honest, you know? And I've gotten to a place now where I don't care how I look. I have to tell you the truth. I don't care if it makes me look stupid, if it makes me look egotistical, if it makes me look like a newcomer. Here's where I'm at. My life is an open book, and it has to be, you know. And that's not for everybody, I guess. But, like, if I don't stay right-sized, if I don't admit where I'm at, if I don't admit when I'm struggling, I've seen it so many times, like, people go out because of that, you know? And, like, if I'm struggling with God, I'm going to tell you. And unfortunately, sometimes it comes out on my sponsees, you know? They're like, I had a great day, and God's great, and life is good. And I'm like, I hate AA. Like it happens, you know? And they're just like, I'm sure you'll be all right, you know? And they just get back to themselves. But, you know, I have really great people that I can talk to in my life, and a really great sponsor that is hard on me but still lifts me up and inspires me. And, you know, somebody said at one point in my sobriety that if you don't have a sponsor that's inspiring to you, that you don't have the right sponsor. And I don't know what credentials you're supposed to have for sponsorship, but I know that my sponsor is inspiring, and that everything that she's gone through sober and made it through sober is incredible. You know, and it's not because she's a spiritual giant. It's because she's truthful with where she's at and transparent, you know, in an open book. And I guess that's just where I like to be. You know, like, I can't hide from the world. I can't hide who I am. I don't want to go out, you know, like, it's not worth it. So, anyway, I'm really glad this is over, and that's all I got.